In 1972, three black prisoners in Angola State Penitentiary, Louisiana, organized their fellow prisoners against institutionalized rape, murder, and segregation within prison facilities. Robert King Wilkerson, Herman Wallace, and Albert Wood Fox started their own chapter of the Black Panther Party inside prison walls and organized and radicalized their fellow prisoners. In retaliation, prison officials slapped spurious murder charges on the three men and placed them in solitary confinement for over three decades, where two of them still remain in what is now known as America's most notorious and violent prison. Now, a documentary called The Angola Three, The Black Panthers and the Last Slave Plantation, chronicles how these men were systematically isolated and silenced for so many years. It features Robert King Wilkerson, who was retried and released in 1999. Wallace and Wood Fox remain imprisoned, and as part of the ongoing campaign to free them, a civil lawsuit is expected to come before the Louisiana Supreme Court on the grounds of cruel and unusual punishment. Angola's prisoners continue to work the surrounding plantations, bending under watch of armed guards on horseback. Many of the prisoners are incarcerated on minor offenses, and 85% of those sentenced to serve time there will never leave. Conditions inside the prison remain horrific to this day. This story of modern-day slavery will be screened on Saturday, November 15th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the L.A. Grand Theater, 400 West Washington Boulevard in L.A., and Robert King Wilkerson will be present for a discussion with the audience. He now joins us on the phone. Welcome to Uprising, Robert.
Thank you. Good to be here.
Thanks very much for joining us. Yeah. Well, it's a very difficult story to think about, but of course so important to think about in this day when people are celebrating the election of Barack Obama and thinking forward in, you know, for an America where white supremacy is waning. A place like Angola, Louisiana still exists and is so little known in the mainstream American consciousness. Can you first begin by giving us your description of what conditions have been like there when you were there, and have they improved, if any?
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Prison is prison is prison. No, Angola, to simply put, and no, it has not improved to any degree. If anything, I think Angola, the way it's practiced and the way we kind of connect prison has been akin, tantamount to slavery of old. It seemed to have been more entrenched now at Angola and among prisons around the country and subsequently around the world as well. So I don't think anything has changed about our prison except the fact that it has become more acceptable. Of course, there are factors, collaborating factors that involve that rest internally that causes this to happen, but it also, the downside is that our prison itself has not changed, and it has become, like I said, much more a part of. I think it is used now as a means to limit dissent, and can be used, has been used, and will continue to be used to shelter the system from its, the burden that comes with being downtrodden, as far as economic wise is concerned, and a lot of other ills that are, consistent with being poor.
Robert, can you speak up? We're having a little difficulty hearing you. And also, if you can answer the question of the history of Angola. People call it a modern-day slave plantation, but in fact, it was a slave plantation.
Yes, it was. It takes its name from the country, Angola, because it is alleged that the majority of the people, the slaves at that time who were housed there, came from Angola. Maybe they took it for granted that the majority of them came from Angola. In any event, that name took on at that time during slavery, and it keeps its name. Actually, it is not just a prison. It is known now as a town, Angola, because even though you have 5,000 prisoners there, if you know the U.S. Census allow prisoners to be counted, in a certain area, and you have a lot of free personnel who lives in the area known as Angola as well, who manage the prison like a huge plantation it is. They have become part of the town. There's a post office and so forth. It has become now Louisiana State Penitentiary. It is at Angola, Louisiana, but at one time the prison itself was known as strictly as Angola.
And the way in which the sexual slavery, as it's being termed, was institutionalized, particularly for new and incoming prisoners, I mean, this is a particularly gruesome aspect of the prison that was one of the reasons, I understand, that you and your fellow prisoners organized. Can you describe how people were essentially brutally raped and what the system was in place, and if it still is going on today?
Well, during the time of during the late 60s, early 70s, Angola was considered the worst prison or the bloodiest prison in the nation. There were a lot of killing going on. That were killing among inmate killing, but there was a lot of killing that was going on that was instigated and perpetrated and initiated by the administration. And so Angola prison, at that particular time, it had an inmate guard system, and these inmate guards ran the prison. It was the backbone of all security. They manned the towers, the guard lines, where people worked in the field. They have, you know, killed people, other inmates, for stepping out of line. They engaged in beating, and when someone dared to run, they chased them down and beat them up. Either kill them, and they also took part in, as you pointed out, the perpetration and the perpetuation of human slavery and young inmates being sold into a sexual slavery, and this was condoned by the administration. So, now those type of stuff, because they got rid of the inmate system some years ago. But the fact, the woes that still exist because they're in prison there. There are other factors involved. You have now, they have built several oppressive camps called Camp J, secured for so-called, people who dust things. And in that camp there, it is known as a horror house. Inmates who, prisoners who go to that camp have been known to, quote, commit suicide or become missing and never seen again. And this is the infamous Camp J that was built. So, and it still exists today. People are not being killed outright. Then they are being, they are being driven to commit suicide, or they are driven insane. Because in prison, when you go to Angola, you are there, for the rest of your life. Especially if you have they don't send anyone there unless you have 20 years or more. And the majority of the people there have a life sentence, or they have a practical life sentence, which is mean that this is a sentence that they cannot do. 199 years can't be done. If you have a life sentence, which is, in Louisiana, life is life is life. They own you, and so you are still in prison. So, in the conditions, they may have raised the sentence from 2 cents an hour to 4 cents an hour, but the condition remained the same.
So the wages are 4 cents an hour?
The wages are, the minimum wage there, I think if you become an inmate counselor, you may make 10 to 15 cents an hour.
And this is for working the plantation?
An hour. But also work.
And they're working in the plantation.
They work in the fields doing whatever it is that needs to be done. Whether it's working in the field or working on the house or the warden house or working on beeline where the quote the free people live. It is still very much slavery mentality, a plantation like mentality that exists among. Even though it is done in the cover by the present warden Burl Cain under the seal of Christianity, it is still like a plantation of old.
I'm speaking with Robert King Wilkerson, one of the original Angola Three. He was released in 2001 and had been in solitary confinement for nearly 30 years. His two colleagues, along with many others, still remain there, and we're going to talk about that in just a second. But I want to announce that the documentary, The Angola Three, The Black Panthers and the Last Slave Plantation, will be screening this Saturday at the Grand Theater in Los Angeles at the Trade Tech College at 400 West Washington Boulevard. It is a free admission, and it starts at 3 p.m. from 3 to 6 p.m. Robert will be there in person for a discussion. The film is narrated by Mumia Abu-Jamal himself, of course, a former Black Panther and political prisoner whose commentaries we air regularly here on this program and throughout KPFK. The film screening is organized by the Southern California Library. So let's talk about the Black Panthers and the reasons why you and your two fellow organizers were thrown into solitary confinement and had these murder charges slapped on you. How exactly did you organize? Did you start a chapter of the Black Panthers inside prison?
Well, all of us, Albert Woodfox, who make up a member of Angola 3, he joined the party in sometime in 69 after having escaped and went to the New Orleans. Went to the tombs. He escaped out of New Orleans Pass prison. He had a 50 years for an armed robbery at that time. And he became, politically aware or conscious in his stay in New York among the tombs. I think he was arrested with some of the Panther 21. On the other hand, Herman had been already in prison for some time on a bank robbery charge. And he was coming back, coming from the Paris, Angola to the Paris prison, doing pro se, filing his own writ to try to give some of the time back, because he had 50 years for the state and 50 years for the federal government and for the Fed. Anyway, I entered the scene sometime around 1970, early 1970. And after being convicted for a crime, I ended up escaping, and a crime in which they had offered me 15 years for, and I refused. I went to trial, and I ended up with 35 years, and that began my political awakening. Of course, I had some other stuff to happen to take place, but it was then at that time when my political awakening began. But around September that same year, the Black Panther Party emerged. They had been in New Orleans, I was told later, since 1969, but it wasn't until 1970 that they, after being recaptured, after having escaped, I was being held in the New Orleans Pass prison, and I heard a newscaster point out that there was a shootout, and there were members of the Black Panther Party, or NCCF, which means the National Committee to Combat Fascism, and later, were members of the Black Panther Party, and there were three women and nine men in the house, and they were subsequently arrested, miraculously, none was hurt or anything like that. They were arrested, and the women who were held in women part of the prison communicated with everyone in prison. And the brothers who were held in the section where I was, below me, they communicated with everyone. And then I eventually got on the tier. They moved me on the tier with a couple of them, the members who were in the party. And we began holding political education class, and I began to learn a little about the Black Panther Party.
So you did political education inside the prisons?
Yes, we did. Prior to that, we went did some hunger strike, and I actually during this time, this was like in the 1970s, early 70s, and prisons everywhere were, they were trying to develop, get attention, and New Orleans Parish Prison really wasn't no exception. But with the Panthers, coming in, this sort of heightened and gave credibility to a lot of things that people were feeling, because the Panthers articulated a lot of the things that we couldn't. And so, yeah, of course, we are joined and connected with the ideology of the Black Panther Party. And like I say, some of us later became members. But we took this same idea to prison. Herman and Albert did. They were the ones who initiated, bringing it, because they went into the main prison population. And I joined them later, but I joined them in a cell, and we continued to educate people who were on the tier with us. But Herman and Albert and some other empathizers and sympathizers from the Black Panther Party really get the credit for having established, one of the only recognized prison chapters.
So you were, the three of you, the Angola Three, as you came to be known, were charged with these murder charges. You were put into solitary confinement for decades. It's difficult to imagine how one doesn't go crazy in a situation like that. But let's talk about your two colleagues who are still in prison, Herman Wallace and Albert Woodfox. They've spent nearly 36 years in solitary, still serving life sentences for the alleged murder of Brent Miller, a correctional officer. You were released, you were retried and released, but what is the status of Wallace and Woodfox right now?
Yes, but let me put it in perspective. Mm-hmm. I was placed in solitary confinement as a result of my connection with the Black Panther Party, and I was placed under investigation for this particular crime in which Herman and Albert were falsely charged with, along with two other people who were members of the Black Panther Party. They never charged me with this. They only had me under investigation. I was later charged. After being in CCR, I was charged with allegedly participating in the death of another inmate.
Hmm.
They, who ended up being killed on a tier in self-defense by another inmate who admitted it was done and who the officer who was on in charge saw only one inmate involved. Nevertheless, they got someone to say that I had participated in this. All of this is, I mentioned it in the book and I explained it, but they got someone to say that I had participated in this. And as a result, I was given a life sentence, tried, you know, along with the person who had admitted that he had killed in self-defense and where all evidence showed he had done in self-defense, and I was given a life sentence. And it was with this life sentence that I had that I had to be exonerated from. It was some years later, the person who declared that the warden had forced them to sign an affidavit against me recanted, and all the evidence showed that, you know, it was the right thing to do, the rational thing to do. So to federal court eventually overturned my conviction, and as a result of their overturning my conviction, I was free. But prior to that time, we all became known as the Angola 3 simply because it was pointed out that we were, after Albert having gotten a new trial sometime in 1995, and the state wanted to try him as a member of the Black Panther Party, and really not based on any evidence that he had actually committed this crime, but they tried the Black Panther Party. It was then at that time that Malik Rahim, who were in the 1970 shootout and a member of the Black Panther Party at that time, had read our case because they had advertised it in a prison newsletter known as an Angle Light, and it was known as the Plaintiff. And so he got some people, former members of the Black Panther Party, on board. And we developed a defense committee at that time. At this time it was Angola 2, and then later it became Angola 3 simply because it was pointed out that we were all members of the Black Panther Party and we were all targeted. And so we started getting, you know, circulating, information about the Angola 3, entire Angola 3. And this is how we really became
Well, Robert, listeners can find out more about the cases and all of the details at the film screening. The Angola 3, The Black Panthers and the Last Slave Plantation is the name of the documentary that's going to be screened Saturday, November 15th from 3 to 6 p.m. at the Grand Theater, L.A. Trade Tech College, 400 West Washington Boulevard. And for more information, you can call 323-759-6063. I want to ask you one final question, Robert, which is, how did you react to the election of Barack Obama, and do you feel that under his presidency some attention can be paid, some light can be shone on the ongoing horrific conditions in Angola?
Okay, well, let me philosophize a little bit. Well, yeah, you know, at one time I did not believe that Barack Obama, you know, had a chance to win it, but then as time went on, I saw that he could. Then I began to see that his message of change began to catch, and, you know, I sat down and I look at, and you know, the two realities. That is the two parties. And you know, someone say reality is what you get people to believe in. And I think Barack, you know, along with his group, has created a reality that people can not only adjust to but cling to and hope to. And I think, yeah, some changes can be brought, but I do believe this, that it won't happen right away. I think a catalyst for change is seen in Barack Obama, and I think, yeah, some changes will be seen throughout the system. I do believe this, providing he doesn't step off the universe, and you know how that goes. That can happen.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Robert, for joining us today. Best of luck to you.
Thank you.
Robert King Wilkerson, my guest, one of the Angola 3, the only one to be released from prison, has spent decades in solitary confinement at Angola State Penitentiary in Louisiana.